The Beautiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.
After the midweek fixtures from last week, it has really played havoc with our schedule. We didn't get a podcast last week, and this week you'll get two. This podcast hopefully will go out on Thursday, and the usual podcasts with all the predictions for this weekend's game will be out on Friday or Saturday. I'm currently being joined by Kyle, and hopefully we'll also get some opinions during the show from Pete Gaskell as well. So after Man United legend Gary Neville conceded defeat that perhaps Man United's title defence is already over, it would be only right that we have a chat about it now. Pete, do you think Neville's right? Is it all over Man United?
I say the title chase, more than likely, yeah. Because dropping so far behind Arsenal and obviously the rest of the teams in there is probably too far to overhaul. And I think a realignment to objectives and aiming for the fourth is probably the best you can hope for, or at least a place in that top four.
Is the top four still in sight, Kyle, or is that also gone now?
I think we can come to a definite conclusion on that after the Christmas games. I think after that New Year's Day game, I'm assuming they're playing on New Year's Day, I think by then we'll know what's going on. I was just, Pete, you know, Man United haven't won a game for over a month in the league. When's the last time? I would love to know when the last time that was the case.
That'd probably be back in the early days of Ferguson's reign, I can imagine. It'd be around that sort of 89, 90 times. So.
I don't think United are good enough for the top four. I don't think they're one of the top four teams in the Premier League.
I think, and I'll be saying this again at some point, but I think the top four teams as of now, Arsenal, Chelsea, City, are probably going to be the top four at the end of the year. But I think if United somehow find form, they're probably the best of the best.
You mentioned Fergie there, Kyle. If he was still, you know, at the helm, would they be in this position now?
I don't think they would have lost quite as many games at home if Fergie was there. I don't think they'd be much better off. Potentially, you could be looking at maybe they'd be there on second or third. You know, 30 points from the games United have had, they should have been able to get onto like 30 points. Mm. They've been competing for, there's been 45 points available to them. You know, Man United should be able to get 60% of that, and they haven't. And I think, he wouldn't have lost against Newcastle at home. Would Fergie? They played. He knows Newcastle inside out, because Newcastle have always played the same style of football, except for when Joe Kinnear was in charge. But, you know, they've always played the same style, so Fergie knew how to beat that. And I think they wouldn't have lost that game, so they wouldn't have at least got a draw. I mean, we look at when Newcastle went there last season, took the lead three times, and still lost 4-3, you know? So I don't think they would be where they are, but they wouldn't be top of the league if Fergie was there. Because Fergie knew this team. They were lucky to win the league last season, and I don't think they'd be top.
It's an ageing team. That's the crux of it, isn't it?
Are they really an ageing team?
Certain players are. I think three quarters of a defence, you can say, are Ferdinand, Vidic, Evra.
You're playing people out of position, though. Why is Phil Jones in defence?
Well, that's the thing. I think he still wants to have Ferdinand and Vidic in there, or he wants to play Jones in midfield. And Jones has played well in midfield in games this season. That'd be the Arsenal game, obviously, springing to mind. So, and also the paucity of central midfielders, because this past month, it's just been a month without Carrick. So.
A couple of years ago, Carrick was a bit part player at Man United. So but I know he's got better. But does that not go to show that United's squad has weakened so much?
No doubt about it.
Squad player a couple of years ago is now seen as the key player who's the excuse for the midfield being so weak now.
I think the Sunday supplement said that when Fergie took over, he picked up a side of underachieving players. And they argued that now, after he's left, Moyes has inherited a team of overachieving players. Do you reckon that they're right there, Pete?
Yeah, there's a certain element where Ferguson was the difference in matches, I think. I think he was, his sheer presence alone was enough to push the players on. And in some cases, yeah, I think losing Ferguson is like losing a 12th man, isn't it?
Obviously, David Moyes was never going to be Alex Ferguson, certainly not straight away. You know, it took Fergie a few years really to find his feet at Man United. So is it wrong for people to blame him? And, you know, are the fans that are behind him, you know, are they right to still be behind him?
I would say that Man United fans are now properly experiencing what it is to be a football fan. And I think it's great because you look around, you saw when they lost against Newcastle, the cameras that were cut into the crowd and they looked so miserable. And you know what? I loved it. Because not because I love the
something always really like Kevin Keegan. You said like Kevin Keegan back.
I would love it if we beat them. I just think that, you know, a lot of those people they cut to were probably 20 years old or younger. They've never even, you know, a bad season for them following Man United, just finishing third in the Premier League. That was Fergie's worst finish in the Premier League. And now they're actually having the experience of not winning every home game, not winning all the time. You know, they've already lost five games. They lost five games out of 38 last season. They've actually lost a third of their games this season. I think it's great. But I think, are they right to stand by David Moyes? Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's easy for football fans to boo now. It's really easy for football fans to boo. But you need to almost turn on a manager that quick. You need to almost have experience of doing it. And you'll see the clubs, the Sunderlands and that, you know, where they do change managers all the time. United fans aren't used to blaming a manager. You know, it's never really been for a lot of the lifespan. I'm talking about the younger fans now, but they've never had much experience having to blame the manager for results. So I think Moyes is probably going to get off easy for a little bit by January. If they're languishing around 10th, theoretically they could be in the bottom half. By then I question what the fans will be like. But I saw the article this week where Moyes says, "Blame me, it's all my fault." And then Ashley Young has come out now and said, "Blame the players, it's all the players' fault." And then he decided who's to blame. I think Moyes, I thought it was insane that he came out. I don't know if people would agree with me, but I thought it was insane that David Moyes said, "Blame me." He's trying to shield the players, by all means, but don't shield these players. These players are hiding behind David Moyes. They're hiding. They actually are probably in some of the worst form of their careers at that club. They're panicking. But they're actually noticing the media are blaming the one thing that's changed at that club, which is David Moyes. And they're hiding behind that, the players, I don't think. There's nothing in the players, to me, that's saying they need to buck up their ideas. And then Moyes saying, "Blame me, it's my fault, it's not the players." I just thought to myself, what have you done, David Moyes? You need to be blaming the players a little bit.
He's lost a lot of confidence. He's lost a hell of a lot of confidence in himself and his own decisions. It's like at the weekend when Van Persie played for full 90 minutes and he came out afterwards in an interview and said, "Really, I shouldn't have done that. I should have played him for 60 or 70 minutes. But if I had took him off, the fans would not have liked him." And I thought, that's not the right attitude. Back at the start of the season, Moyes would have took him off. Ferguson would have done. They would have took him off when he needed to come off, and stop what the fans think. If he's thinking he's making the right decision, he can't be swayed by pressure from outside.
Well, on the actual live coverage, the cameras happened to cut to Moyes as he was talking to Van Persie, and he shouted across the pitch saying, "Can you make it? Can you finish the game out?" So obviously he did check with Van Persie, but he then said in his interviews, like you said afterwards, that he was only meant to play for 70 minutes. So goes to show that.
Well, that was an excellent
plan for him.
Will Moyes still be around at the end of the season?
I'd hope he stays around because I think it is a shift. It's a massive sea change at United. So there's always going to be some element of transition, whether people like it or not. So he's not done as well as he would have hoped. Of course he hasn't, but I don't think he's been an absolute complete disaster.
Okay, come May, where will they be then, Pete?
I would say there will be an upturn in form. I think there has to be. But how much an upturn, I don't know. I'd say anywhere between third and seventh, somewhere in that sort of range.
Kyle?
Highest of the finish will be sixth.
I'm probably going to agree, highest position, sixth. We don't usually cover international football on The Beautiful Game, but we'll make an exception this week. As we look to the World Cup draw. So, Kyle, were England handed a decent group for this World Cup, or are they looking for another difficult time of it next year?
Cracks me up when people say, "Oh, we could have, we wanted an easy group or a hard group." It's the World Cup, Dan.
Yeah, there is no such thing, is there? Yeah. It's an easy group.
It's the 32 best countries out of however many there are recognised by FIFA. You know, they've all spent a year and a half, 2 years trying to get to this, you know, qualifying for this, or even longer for some of the countries, isn't it? I think it's a tricky draw. The Italy, I'm more concerned about the Uruguay game than I am the Italy game. I think it all depends on who Hodgson takes to the World Cup, or not just to the World Cup, actually, who he selects. This is a great, we've said before, this is a great opportunity to give the youngsters experience of a World Cup. I think we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about not being enough English players at the top, you know, playing in the Premier League. And I think this is a great opportunity. Take Barkley, take Luke Shaw, you know, these players who are, by all rights, not ready for international football. But this is an opportunity to get some crucial experience. You know, it's very likely on paper you would say we're not going to qualify from this group. Unless we somehow get a win against, probably a win against Italy or Uruguay and a draw against one of them. We can't lose either of those games, you know?
Yeah.
Generally, if you lose a game in the World Cup, you don't go through. Or you've got a group where you can win the other two games. I'm not necessarily sure England have got that. So take those players who can get experience of playing against some of the best international size there are out there. If Hodgson has in his mind he wants to go and try and win the thing, which we know he's not going to, but as in he's not going to win it, he might still try and name his strongest teams. You know, I've said before, if you see Gerrard and Lampard in the central of England's midfield, then you know that this country is about 20 years away from being able to compete for anything. I would give you Barclays, you Luke Shaw's, you know, get some of the young English strikers in there. Just say, go out there, guys. Give it your best. And do you know what? The Italians, the Uruguayans, they won't have a bloody clue about England's youngsters. They won't. They'll be worried about Rooney, Gerrard, Joe Hart. You know, those will be the main ones they'll be looking at. But it's just throwing a bunch of youngsters they don't have a clue about. And then just and take it from there.
Do you think that Roy Hodgson is the right man to lead England into this World Cup?
No, I don't think he was when he got appointed either. That's why I don't think anyone saw his appointment coming. I thought Harry Redknapp would have been a better appointment at the time for for the style of play he plays. I think England do need a younger approach and a more youthfulness to the way they play, you know. I just feel like they feel a bit laboured under Hodgson. And I feel like he's a bit... It's his last big job in football, isn't it? You know, he might get another English club after, but I wouldn't expect him to. And I don't know, just some of the comments he comes out with. He does say a lot of the right things, but you never believe him. I don't know how Roy Hodgson motivates people. Because I wouldn't be motivated by him. In the dressing room, changing room. You know, I can't imagine any circumstance where he would motivate me to go out there and beat Brazil. I know he's actually got himself some decent results, hasn't he? But against some of the big teams. But I just can't see him at the World Cup.
If you look at those groups, when we were just about to be drawn out of the hat, you know, with a fourth team to come out, what group at that stage did you want to be in? Did you want England to get placed in? For me, you know, I remember looking at that and seeing it being drawn, thinking, oh, it's got to be Group E, isn't it? You know, Switzerland, Ecuador, Honduras. But at the same time, you're thinking, that's probably your easy group. That's probably what the media was calling the dream group.
Yeah.
But actually, really, and I think you touched on it earlier, about you really want to be in a group where there is one really difficult side to go up against, but ultimately there's got to be two that you think you can win.
Yeah, because I think the problem with Group E, Switzerland actually, I think, are higher ranked than France, certainly, in their group. I don't know. I think they might be higher ranked. Are they higher ranked than England, actually, right now?
Yeah,
they're close to it. Certainly close to it, I think. A group like that, Apart from the fact that, you know, Switzerland or, you know, Ecuador could be a banana skin, but I can't imagine they are. You don't raise your game at
No.
all. You know, England, they've got Italy in their first game, you know, the last team that knocked them out of a competition. And that's a great way to start a World Cup. You know, so I think you want one of the big teams. And also, if you're in a group without any big teams, that means that you haven't got an opportunity to do one over a big team. And it means that all those big teams are waiting for you. If you're Brazil in your group and you still qualify, you know you can't get Brazil again until the final.
Yeah.
You know, if you're France now, for whatever, if you want to talk about conspiracy theories on Platini getting involved in the change in the draw to benefit France because France should have had the worst seed, regardless of that, France now could face any team from the second round onwards at all. And I think actually that group was bad for France because I don't think France are. They haven't clicked as a team for a number of years. Their group is probably too easy for them to actually click as a team now as well. And I would expect they'll go out against the first big opposition. But to answer your question, where would I want England playing? That's a toughie, you know. I think I would probably have said actually, maybe Group H. Belgium is a tough game, but you'd probably say they'll beat Algeria. I don't even know Algeria have got to a World Cup. South Korea, you'd assume they'd be able to beat them. But I quite like Brazil's group. You know?
I actually quite like basically every group but ours and but Group B. I'd have been quite happy with.
Oh, I don't. I don't know. Is it Group G that's got Germany, United States, Netherlands?
No, it's Group G is Germany, Portugal, Ghana, and USA.
Oh yeah,
Port
sorry,
Port
Spain, Netherlands,
Port
there, isn't
Port
it?
Portugal were in the same pot as us, so ultimately it would have been Germany and USA. But I know we played badly against USA in the last competitive competition, but really it should be a side that we should be able to beat. And the other one that I quite like the look of was Group H at the time was Argentina, Iran, and Nigeria. Nigeria are certainly not the squad they were a few years ago, and I don't think Iran would give us much bother. And you'd get your nice, tasty game of Argentina as well in there. Because can you actually realistically see England getting a win against any of the sides got to go up against in this group?
I could potentially then see them losing every game.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we touched on France, but have they got lucky? Or, you know, as you've already said, is it going to be harder for them to motivate themselves?
They've got incredibly lucky, Dan, because they should have been the worst seed of the European countries. And they've got off easy because of this whole Pot X stuff. And I can't imagine they'll have as bad a World Cup as recently. In the last couple of tournaments have been shocking for them, haven't they?
Yeah.
A real fall from grace from the
Well, since France, isn't it?
yeah.
I think the last time they don't think well.
It's been a tough 10 years for them. Regardless of whether they find form or not in that group, they're going out as soon as they go up against a big team, without question.
How do you think those groups, looking at it from A to H, who do you think will qualify?
From Group A, I would expect Brazil and Mexico to qualify.
I'd agree.
Croatia are a decent team, but they're not what they were, and I think the temperatures are going to really benefit Brazil and Mexico there. From Group B, this is such a tricky one. I'd probably say Spain and Chile. But you know what?
I kind of actually think, could Spain be that banana skin, you
I
know,
was about
that
to say I think Spain could be the team that drop out.
completely unexpectedly, but at the
Yeah,
same
it's normally,
time.
ironically, it's normally Holland that something bad happens with, and they're in that group. But everyone's going to get 3 points against Australia. And it's about how they do against each other then, I think.
And I think Chile actually could top it.
Group C is a tough one because, again, that would be a lovely one for England to get dropped in. Colombia,
Yep.
going to go through, I think. And Greece are finally starting to recover from those several years of. They've been awful, haven't they, since they won the Euros? Was
Yeah.
it 2004? Yeah, 2004 they won it, wasn't it? But I would probably say it's going to be the Ivory Coast and Colombia. I think Tiote, Drogba, and that will make the difference.
The big group D.
It's going to be Uruguay and Italy.
I'm gonna be hopeful and go Uruguay and England, but
And I
looking at
think
my plate.
it would probably be in that order as well, I would have thought. Uruguay top, England second, if that happens. But yeah, I'd like to see England go through there. But I just think it's all down to what Hodgson. What's he going to be told by the FA at the start? You know, what do they want him to do? Because we won't find out what the FA have
Want.
given. What their mission. I think from Greg Dyke's throat slitting gesture at the award ceremony. I suspect that
he's done, isn't he? I think he's ready to concede defeat before
yeah.
we've even
yeah. So I can't imagine Hodgson's going to have that. It's going to be told it. There's high expectations, but
yeah. Group E, you've got Switzerland, Ecuador, France, and Honduras. So the kind of dream group, as the press are calling it.
You'd have to assume that it's going to be France and Switzerland, but you never know if Ecuador might,
surprise them. It'd be more their climate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's the hard thing with this World Cup. And it's like going to be like it for the next few World Cups, really, where climate's really going to play a big part. But I would probably say Switzerland and France.
Yep.
From that group.
Group F.
Argentina going to be on top.
Yep.
Definitely. I think it's got to be Nigeria, isn't it? Group G is a... that's a toughie. Considering Portugal only just got through, you know, I'd probably say USA and Germany.
Okay. And Group H.
Do you know what? I'm going to go against everything I believe. I'm going to say Belgium and South Korea.
And if there's a sweepstake, which maybe we might think about doing, which side would you want to be pulling out of the hat? So who do you want to win? The World Cup 2014?
I want to win. Who do I think could do it?
Yeah.
Uruguay. Luis Suarez on his own. Could win a World Cup.
Quite possibly. I'm going to go for Belgium. Got a really, really good, strong 11 there. I think is it left back that maybe is their weakness? But even then, Vertonghen can go out there. So
it's certainly doing well for Tottenham in
yeah.
that position. So.
Moving back to club level now, we're coming close to the end of the year, which means the January window, which is becoming more and more exciting as the years go by. Which players do you reckon Cardiff need to bring in? Or what? At least, what positions do they need?
It's got to be wingers, really. We're playing central midfielders out on the wings, which makes no sense because we have got great wingers such as Craig Noon on the bench who can't get a game. We've loaned out Conway, who's a great winger. So I'd have to say it's wingers. I can't tell you who those players are, who we need to bring in, but certainly wingers to bring more attacking play to us. But to be honest, Dan, there's a lot that needs to change at Cardiff in that, you know, we're playing with a short man up front as a target man, the rest of our outfield players playing behind the halfway line. So I think more than just players are needed at Cardiff. So.
And looking at my side, Newcastle, would just getting Remy on a permanent deal be sufficient? Which is likely to happen if you look at the type of business that Mike actually often does, and ultimately joking is recent track record of bringing in absolutely nobody other than a low knee. Is making that deal permanent actually enough for Newcastle, or do they need to sign players in January?
Well, question for you. Newcastle let Demba Ba go because they wouldn't offer him a contract.
Yep.
Which would pay him $60,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, Loic Remy now. He's got the best goals to shots ratio, I think, in the Premier League. I don't know if this past weekend, but he's going to be going to a World Cup.
Yep.
In the summer, how much do you think Loic Remy wants to be paid?
It's an interesting question.
Considering that he clearly chose QPR over Newcastle for the money.
Yeah.
This time last year.
Yeah, it's difficult. The issue is I can't see us actually bringing somebody else in next summer. If we don't bring him in, who will we bring in?
No, this is the problem. They should never have loaned him in.
Yeah.
If they thought he was going to be that good, they've gone back in for him even after you rejected them.
Yeah.
They should never have loaned him. Harry Redknapp has said that Remy isn't in his plans.
Yeah.
For the Premier League, so QPR would probably have sold him.
Yeah.
In truth, so why have Newcastle loaned him? There's yeah. money there. They've got a minimum of $60 million coming to them at the end of the season. You know, they haven't spent a penny of that. They probably even spent spent a fee on the loan.
Yeah. But that's we currently, in terms of points and money spent, we currently are sitting pretty at the top of the table because we've spent, other than that, I think it was actually something like 1.5 million, if you're not including the actual wages, was spent on that loan deal. So that's all we spent in the summer. I'm just trying to think from a realistic point of view, if we were to make that deal permanent in January, is that going to be enough? For most fans, I don't think it would be. You want to see more. But then last January, we spent big. And they are starting to come good now, some of those players. You know, we talked about at the start of the season how Debuchy showed no worth at all last season.
For me, he's the best he's the best right back.
At the moment, yeah.
I think they do need to get Remy. And I think of the way the club does the transfer business now. If they get Remy, that's a minimum of 60 grand a week. He probably knows that you could get, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at Chelsea next season. He could go there and get 100 grand a week, if not more. So he'll push out for more at Newcastle. Without a shadow of a doubt, if they do that, Kabay's wages will double. Chiote's wages will double. Colaccini's wages will probably double if he sticks around. Krull's wages will double. You can't deny it. Those players will expect more money.
Yeah.
Because they're all on, I think Newcastle average wage right now is like 30 grand a week or so. Yeah. I think Kabay's on. And he's a top player. So if they refuse to pay Bar that 60 grand, and Remy's going to come up more. And to be honest, it's good because he's done so well, but he's doubled, if not trebled, his asking price now.
Yeah.
QPR must be laughing.
So we look at players leaving clubs, particularly high-profile clubs. Which big names could potentially go? Robin van Persie, for example, has been rumoured mostly on social networks and unreliable sources like The Sun that he could be on his way out, or at least his put in a transfer request to leave Man United. Will he leave?
Good God, I don't know. You're David Moyes. You're under pressure. Man United could have their worst Premiership finishing position to date. Do you want to be the manager, I guess, for Robin van Persie?
Certainly not.
No, not at all. You know, so he's there, and he's probably going to be there until the end of a contract, and he'll go for cheap.
If there's a big name that will go, who will it be?
From United.
From any side of the Premier League.
From any side.
And obviously, we're talking January here. We're not talking the summer.
And I think because it's January, I don't think any of them will move.
So, Luis Suarez is staying?
Yeah, he won't go in January. They won't sell him in January.
No.
They won't sell him next summer either. He's probably going to get Champions League for Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, he'll be happy. He just wants to play Champions League, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And Liverpool... whatever crap they've been over the years, they do really well in the Champions League because they're one of those clubs who are just designed for it, aren't they? They're like Man United, you know, and sometimes outdone themselves in that competition just because of the history and the romantic, you know, connection they've got with the competition. And he won't go. And to be honest, on current form, I know Arsenal bid 40 million for him,
mm-hmm.
and Liverpool were saying minimum 60 before we'll even talk. I'd probably say that on present form, he'd beat the Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
Transfer fee. You're looking at a 95 million bid, and I'm not sure there's anyone on the planet who can afford that right now.
You've already kind of mentioned his name. Christopher Samba, linked again with a move back to the Premier League. West Ham and Newcastle apparently fighting it out for his signature. Do you reckon we'll see him back in England again?
I don't know what this guy's about. He must be money-driven. He's back at Anzhi thing, isn't he? Is he back?
Yeah, he's apparently struggling to settle back in Moscow.
So why did he go back there?
Because
a permanent sign-in to QPR, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Then he took him back. That's insane. He could come back. I hope he doesn't end up at Cardiff or someone.
Sanya has said that he's quite willing to become a free agent, and that's looking likely in the summer. Do you reckon Wenger will go in for a right-back? In January, then he's currently linked to Coleman, performing very well at right back for Everton at the moment. Yeah, is Seamus Coleman an Arsenal player?
I don't think Everton will ever sell him. Then they're resigned to losing Baines at some point, but I don't think they're even contemplating losing Coleman. And I don't think Everton need to now. I think a lot of the club has been sold in the past. I think Martinez's strategy of loaning players in is probably saving them a lot of money.
Yep.
And they're going to sell. They're going to sell Baines at some point. They're going to get 20 plus for him, and that would have been 50 million off to sell two players. You know that and Fellaini. So I don't think they need to sell Coleman, and I don't think they will. Arsenal, if he's going to replace Sanya, I think that'll happen next summer. Arsene Wenger doesn't really strike me ever as a manager who wants to upset the balance of his team with January, with big January signings. You know, and for that reason, I can't imagine you'll bring in another right back.
Could Man City make a big money goalkeeping signing, particularly with Joe Hart's in different form?
There's talk of Begovic, isn't there? And there's also talk of Casillas, I think, who's going there, isn't there? Has someone else been linked to him?
Most recently.
God, that's a big money move for a goalkeeper, isn't it? Harsh on Joe Hart, because I don't know where he goes.
Well, if they got Neuer, that is your goalkeeper for the next at least 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So Joe Hart's not going to look at Casillas, however.
Well, Joe Hart has to move abroad.
Whereas Casillas, ultimately, yeah, he's not got many years left.
No, and he's rightfully not Real Madrid's first choice.
Yeah, but
goalkeeper anymore.
But he would come in and be maybe the kick up the arse that Joe Hart would need to then fight back and regain his number one.
And it would probably be the last big move for Casillas. He'd probably see that he's probably going to be on the bench again in a year.
Yeah.
But he'd probably be able to get more money than he's getting in Real Madrid, even though I imagine he's handsomely paid. You know, Man City will pay him another 100 grand a week. That's insane, isn't it? I think if someone does come into Man City, it's possible they'll get a goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I can't see how Joe Hart's going to get back in that team now. You know, Pantilimon made that mistake at West Brom where that ball bounced in off him after he'd got out for that dive. And he was in the squad in the next game still. I just can't see how Joe Hart's going to get back in that team. And it's harsh on Joe. But he hasn't been good enough. I think if someone does come into Man City, and I don't know who they'd go for, Joe Hart needs to move. I can't see him moving anywhere in England because no one can afford his wages.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect to see him go abroad, maybe if not in January, in the summer. But he's got a World Cup coming up. If Joe Hart's sensible, if he wants to show a desire to play for England, even though he's probably guaranteed that spot anyway, I think he has to go to Pellegrini and say, am I going to play, else I want to move this month because I want to get some games before the World Cup.
Okay, moving on, we talk about him in the main podcast, which will come out in the next few days, but Luis Suarez, he's been in spectacular form of recent. How long can that continue for, Kyle?
Until he bites his next opponent. it's as long as Suarez wants it to go on for. He's got the talent, he's got the ability. He's at a club where he'll always be the centre of everything, of their play. So it's up to him what he wants to do with that, really. Luis Suarez is his own worst enemy. And as long as he keeps himself under control, and there's been no issues with him this season, he's dived once or twice, but you know, generally, we've been talking about him for football reasons. We're all afraid of him going into the World Cup when England play them. So I think going for as long as he wants. I think he could probably get himself the European Golden Boot for all of Europe this season.
Pete, do you think Liverpool can realistically hold on to him at the end of this year?
If they're still in the Champions League, yes.
Yeah.
But it also depends on what happens at the World Cup. If Uruguay go massively far, if Uruguay do really well, then you know suddenly everyone will be queuing at the door, won't they? Even more so than normal. I think if they're in the Champions League, they have a good chance to keep up with him, yeah.
How much could he go for, though?
Well, I think he's a better player than Bale. It could be anything, couldn't it? It could be 100. It'll be 100 million plus. But how much over that is just, it's up to Real Madrid's bean counters to decipher, isn't it?
Kyle, what would be best for his career? Would it be best staying in England, staying at Liverpool, or would he be, you know, could he take the next step up, and would he excel, or could it be a failure?
I'm not really sure what the next step up is for Suarez. I think if he could get another 2 seasons at Liverpool in Champions League, I think he'd have to move after that so he didn't stagnate. But I'm not really sure where he'd go to from there. You know, the only kind of club I could see him at would be Manchester City. And Real Madrid, I can't really see him there, though, you know. And I suppose, can you see him at Madrid?
They need a full-on centre-forward.
Yeah, feeding off Bale and Ronaldo.
Ronaldo on one wing. Ronaldo on one wing, Bale on the other, Suarez at front. I could definitely see that.
Yeah,
I think he'd have to make that move in like another 2 seasons' time. I'm not sure what he'd have left to achieve in England, to be honest. I'm sure he'd like to get a Premiership medal, but it's hard to tell, isn't it? You know, I think his form will last for a long time. I don't think he's a flash in the pan player, but I do see him returning to Europe at some point.
You mentioned Real Madrid there, Pete. What team, you know, other than Real Madrid, could he perhaps slot into?
I'd say it's Madrid or bust, really. I think there's no other side of the Premiership would fit him in. Even Chelsea, I don't think he'd be a match for how they play. And looking abroad, I don't think he'd get into the Barcelona team, which is frightening because he would just be saying how good he is. But But that's just a strength that they have, and I don't think he's a Bayern Munich player either, so it is Madrid or bust there.
So I don't think you've been asked this question, Kyle, but is Luis Suarez the best player in the world right now?
I don't know if he's the best player, but I think he's the best striker in the world.
Is that counting Ronaldo?
Ronaldo, he's not an out-and-out striker, is he? He certainly doesn't play like that. He's got Benzema and people ahead of him, but I would include Ronaldo as well as like an attacking forward, which I kind of see as a group of the midfield kind of role. So I don't think he's a better player than Ronaldo on his day, I suppose. So no, he's probably not the best player in the world, but he's certainly the best. I think he's the best striker.
Okie dokie. Well, I think that's all we've got time for on this podcast. But don't forget, you've got another one coming up in a couple of days where we cover the game at the Etihad between Man City and Arsenal, as well as the match at White Hart Lane between Tottenham and Liverpool. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_podcast or on our individual Twitters. Mine is DTT240991. Kyle, you can follow on Kyle Thomas West. Well, Pete, you need to follow on Pete D. Gaskill. Don't forget, you can join in the discussions on our Twitter or ask us any questions which you might feature in the next podcast. Also, if you fancy joining the team for a future podcast, you can go to our website at www.thecompassnet.com and send a personal message to Kyle West or myself, Dan Taylor, and we'll see if we can fit you in on a future show. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week. The Beautiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.